Welcome back to Core Anesthesia. Whether you are a student prepping for tests and boards or a CRNA here to earn CEUs, we are glad you've joined us. For more about us, make sure to check us out on Instagram at Core Anesthesia and online at coreanesthesia.com.
Welcome to the Core Anesthesia Podcast. I'm Sachi.
And I'm Rhea. Together in this care plan series, we're diving into the intricate world of anesthesia, tackling those tough cases that keep you on your toes in the operating room.
As experienced CRNAs with a passion for teaching and mentoring, we're here to break down the complexities of challenging procedures, giving you the need-to-know information.
Each episode, we dissect specific cases, exploring anesthesia techniques, case considerations, pharmacology, and much more.
We've teamed up with Cole and Tanner for these care plan episodes to share our expertise and insights.
So whether you're a student aiming to build a strong foundation or a professional seeking advanced insights, join us as we navigate the intricacies of anesthesia practice. So welcome to another care plan episode. Today we're going to be discussing total or hemicolectomies. For total colectomies, this means removing all of the colon, and the surgeon will just leave the rectum in place. This is usually done for ulcerative colitis or Crohn's disease, and the patient will typically need an ileostomy. Or the surgeon can create an iliorectal anastomosis and avoid that ostomy altogether. For a hemicolectomy, you either have a right or a left hemicolectomy where half of the colon is removed, and this can be due to Crohn's disease where they're going to be removing the unhealthy portion of the colon, or can be due to colon cancer or some kind of bowel obstruction. For a right hemicolectomy, the cecum, the appendix, the ascending, and even parts of the transverse colon can be removed. For the left hemicolectomy, the descending colon and the sigmoid is removed, and the remaining portion of the colon is going to get reconnected to the rectum.
As far as types of anesthetics goes, this kind of depends, you know, whether or not we're going to be doing these laparoscopically or open. If we're doing these cases open, that patient is going to have a very large incision. We really want to consider doing an epidural for either intraoperative, but primarily postoperative pain control. It seems to be sort of split whether or not people are running their epidurals in the middle of in big open cases like this, especially when there's a risk of blood loss depending on what the surgeon is removing. But if you can run your epidural intraoperatively, I'm a fan of it, especially if you are able to transfuse the patient blood if needed and keep them hemodynamically stable. They're pretty healthy otherwise. ERAS protocols are pretty common in colorectal surgeries. We want to decrease complications like the anastomotic leak. This is one thing that the surgeons are really focused on. Ileus as well, and PONV. We do not want these big open belly patients to be dry heaving and throwing up after surgery. Surgeons also really appreciate it when we don't hydrate these patients. We don't flood them with a ton of fluid, especially if you're doing ERAS protocol. We try to limit our fluids. We really focus on trying to avoid the things that are going to delay that return of bowel function. We are going to do a general anesthetic with the ET tube, keep these patients relaxed. With these open belly cases, we want to avoid nitrous in these bowel surgeries. And if the patient has a bowel obstruction or they're nauseated, we want to make sure we do an RSI. We can also do a thoracic epidural or a TAP block for pain control. The regional results in improved postoperative pain management, earlier return of the bowel function. These patients get up out of the bed, they can walk quicker, and you know they can tolerate food better. So our main concerns intraoperatively, of course, besides blood loss and hemodynamic management, is we really want to think about postoperatively, how can we prevent these patients from being so nauseous, and how can we get them moving to prevent that ileus?
Mm-hmm. So other preoperative considerations that we have are based on why they're having their bowel removed. So if it's because of bowel rupture. So these patients can be septic, they can be hemodynamically unstable, and they likely will need a second IV, maybe an A-line, depending on how sick they are, and they may be on several types of immunosuppressors. So, you know, these patients are really sick, unstable. So you want to make sure that you have those drips ready in the operating room if needed, like phenylephrine or your norepinephrine drip. If they're there for a bowel obstruction, especially with abdominal distension, they are going to have a decreased functional residual capacity because they're going to have, you know, impaired diaphragmatic excursion. And so you can expect these patients to quickly desaturate on induction. For these patients, you want to check their electrolytes, especially if they've had lots of nausea and vomiting or lots of, you know, nasogastric tube output. So you can expect some kind of possible electrolyte imbalance, and you want to correct those imbalances intraoperatively. You can check their HNH and check their coagulations, especially if you're going to do some kind of regional technique like an epidural. With the ERAS protocols, we're not seeing as many bowel preps anymore, but the bowel prep may have been given depending on the surgeon. And so if that's the case, these patients are going to be, you know, hypovolemic and dry, and you want to be careful with your fluid management. Like Sachi said, you don't want to give too much fluid and overload the patients, but at the same time, you want to make sure that they are normal volemic for these types of procedures. If they have an existing NG tube, you definitely want to suction that out before induction, because you don't want any of those secretions to potentially come up after induction and have that patient aspirate. And then usually the antibiotics for these cases are more than the standard ANSEP, because you're going into the bowel. You have different types of bacteria in there that's going to require other types of antibiotics on top of ANSEP, such as flagyl.
These patients intraoperative, you know, they're pretty dry. When you hook them up to the monitor, their heart rate, especially with those bowel obstruction patients, they're tachycardic, they're intravascularly dry. So these can, these patients can tank on induction as well.
Yeah.
So as far as monitors and devices go, if they don't already have an existing NG tube or an OG tube, you're going to want to ask the surgeon if they want one of those. Blood loss, typically not a ton, less than 100 mLs for laparoscopic or open. You do want to make sure that you have two IVs if this is an open procedure. You can get away with one large bore IV if it's a good IV for laparoscopic. You know, if they're going to tuck the arms, we want to make sure that the IVs are working, dripping, not positional after you tuck. As far as positioning goes, if this is going to be an open colectomy, they're going to be supine. Laparoscopic, they might be in steep Trendelenburg. You know, really, you might be doing a lot of maneuvering on the bed because the surgeon's going to want the bowel to be moving out of the way in different parts of the surgery. So you'll be doing a lot of bed up, bed down, head up, head down sort of thing.
Yeah. Another type of positioning could be lithotomy, because if they're trying to reconnect the rectum to a different part of the bowel, they need access to the rectum to place a special device that connects those two parts together. And what it kind of looks like are like two metal ends that, at least the cases that I've done, where you put one end into the rectum and then you sew one end to the free portion of the intestine, and then you kind of snap the two together and it staples around it and cuts a hole, and that now is, you know, the bowels are stapled together. So you may see that position as well.
And intraoperatively, some anesthetic considerations. We want to avoid nitrous. We already talked about avoiding fluid overloading these patients to prevent anastomosis complications when keep them euvolemic. And we want to really try to manage their pain, trying to avoid opioids when we can, but preventing that nausea and vomiting. But we want to make sure these patients are comfortable. Postoperatively, typically these patients will go to PACU. If they're really sick, they might go up to the ICU. They may require a PCA if they're not a candidate for regional anesthesia and, you know, they needed to have an open procedure. They also might get that tap block. And, you know, these patients, if they're really sick, they might remain intubated and then go to the unit as well. So it really just kind of depends why they're having this procedure done.
Yeah. With the advent of ERAS, you know, ERAS kind of started with colon surgery. That they were kind of the first specialties that got ERAS really popular, because they saw such a decrease in length of stay after they've incorporated all of these things like, you know, preoperative nutrition, not doing the bowel prep, not keeping patients super, super dry before the procedure. And they found that patients are up and out of bed. couple hours after surgery, and they're being discharged within just a couple days. I mean, sometimes as short as 2 days, they're going home after having complete bowel surgery. So that, you know, colon surgery has really revolutionized the way that we prep patients during the perioperative period and how we deliver anesthesia for these patients.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. All right, that is it for this hemicolectomy care plan episode. We will see you guys on the next one.